B-Pod Studios.
The Sports Hub.
Fred, hello.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hey.
What's going on? Are we on fire?
People need to chillax.
Mike Francesa appears to rip fought while ripping Adam Gase.
I love meatballs.
Do you?
Let's go Red Sox.
Hit me like a bomb, bomb, bomb.
Go Red Sox.
Hit me like a bomb, bomb, bomb.
Wall dick, well, yeah.
She made out with my dad.
Hello. Welcome to the show.
Get this week's dog out of here.
Good morning. We are at the Toucher and Rich radio program. We're in the Town Fair Tire Studios. Give us a call at 617-779-0985. You can watch us over there on twitch.tv. Just search for 98.5 The Sports Hub. Go to your app store and get the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. Stream the show. Listen to our podcasts. Read all the blogs that people do. And that, of course, was Flight of the Bumblebee by Stu Hamm. The first bass solo ever recorded. But, no, that was, of course, Eruption. And Eddie Van Halen has died. He had cancer, which I was unaware. I knew he had part of his tongue removed. I didn't know that he was deep into the cancer.
It's been a long fight for him. And I remember it was about a year ago that David Lee Roth did an interview. And it was as grim as I've heard anyone talk about Eddie Van Halen. Like, I mean, he said that he's just... matter of fact, somebody asked whether or not they were going to get back together. And David Lee Roth was like, I don't think Van Halen's going to play again. And I want to find that interview. I actually went down a pretty big rabbit hole yesterday, and I was looking at a bunch of Van Halen stuff. I actually watched part of his last show ever. It was almost 5 years ago to the day. It was October 4th of 2015. And I just kind of want to see. I mean, he obviously didn't look good in those later days, but there was one kind of cool moment that I saw. So everyone knows that, you know, the back and forth between Eddie Van Halen and David Lee Roth, it's been on again, off again. There's a part in the show, you know, David Lee Roth likes to ramble, obviously, between songs, and he isn't very good usually lately during the songs, but he started making a joke about John Bon Jovi and Richie Sambora not getting along. He was like, you know, rumor has it that John doesn't like Richie Sambora.
Rumor. Said, that's straight up fact.
Yeah, I know. He doesn't like him.
No.
And he said, imagine the odds of that blank happening. And he looks over at Eddie, and Eddie starts laughing. And he goes, the difference is that Eddie and I agree to apologize every couple of summers and then come out here and share the good news with you. And then he, like, went over and, like, gave him, like, a big hug and said, the best years of my life, you know, all of the high points of my life have been with you. And he goes, I'll always half Jesus towards you, Eddie Van Halen. And he did the John Bon Jovi move, kind of mocking him. And they started laughing. But that was kind of cool that on the last show ever between the two of them, he made this big public thing that, you know, we've always, you know, fought. But in the end, we've always made up with it. And, you know, everything great that's happened in my life has been because of this guy. So it was kind of a cool way to go out, you know, publicly, not knowing obviously that would be their last show together. But yeah, it's been a really, really tough battle. And I don't, and when did he have his tongue, part of his tongue removed? That was like 2 or 3 years ago, right?
I'm not positive. Okay. But I know people are very upset at David Lee Roth on Twitter because I follow Sebastian Bach. I mean, who doesn't? And the Bach man retweeted David Lee Roth. And David Lee Roth just said, what is it? What a long, great trip it's been. And it was a picture of him and Eddie, and people did not feel that was solemn enough for the occasion. They did not like that Diamond Dave did that.
Oh, geez. Why don't you mourn the way I want you to mourn?
Well,
I hate
listen,
people who are like that.
Well, you know, take that to your grave, all that hate. I'll tell you this is that, people are very upset at Diamond Dave. They didn't think that it was heartfelt enough. Some people are upset he didn't use the word love.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, and, you know, they're like, Dave, you wouldn't have ever gotten that radio show if it wasn't for Eddie. So they got that. But, yeah, Eddie Van Halen is no longer with us. And unfortunately, I left during the first song of the first time, of the only time that I saw Van Halen.
Yep.
Because they were so terrible.
Yeah, David Lee Roth is he's bad, and he was on tour. I guess it's still going to happen, but you know, this past year, this past summer, I was supposed to go see David Lee Roth and Kiss together, and I guess they're coming back. They've rescheduled it, and it's coming to Mansfield. Obviously, it's because I want to see Kiss. I've seen David Lee Roth a ton of times. He's a disaster. Like, he's in just awful shape. He can't sing. It's kind of sad because everyone knows what just... I mean, how many bands can credit David or can credit the formula that Van Halen put out there for being what they are? They were they basically created hair metal.
Yeah, every metal band in the 80s, every like hair metal band in the 80s, and in 1984, when I was a fourth grader, my mom went to Off the Record in Farmington Hills, Michigan, to buy Van Halen tickets for the 1984 tour, and they sold out in like a minute and a half. So I had an opportunity. I could have, but we didn't know anything about scalping in those days. And I wish I would have known, because I could have seen Van. They were my favorite band next to them and Judas Priest, almost neck and neck.
God, that is so cool that your parents brought you to concerts that young. Like, that's something I did with my kids, but I just, like, I wasn't allowed to go to shows till I was, well, in fairness, no, my first real concert, I think I was in seventh grade, and I got to see Rat. My brother brought me to see them, and that was awesome. Like, that was, I couldn't believe it. But, I mean, that was later on, but that was a rare exception. I wasn't able to go until I was, like, in high school. Oh, that's so cool that your parents brought you to that stuff.
It was cool. In fifth grade, I mean, I showed up to the last day of school rocking a Judas Priest wife beater, gray wife beater with Rob Halford on a motorcycle, riding that son of a bitch out of the moon.
That is awesome, man.
Out of the moon. I saw Beastie Boys on their License to Ill tour when I was 11.
Oh, my God. Like, that... See,
I saw Def Leppard on their Pyromania tour. Jesus.
Well, the reason that the Beastie Boys one is so impressive is because that tour made national news. Like, even, like, people like my parents knew how dirty that was, because I remember watching, it was, like, 60 Minutes or some sort of one of these, like, national news shows, and it was like, well, make sure your kids don't go to this tour, and it showed, like, a penis running out on stage.
It was, I'll tell you, it was so sexual. No, they had like a penis, a papier-mâché penis that came out of the amps. Like, that was, I mean, it was ridiculous. I mean, it was dumb. Anyone who was like super offended by that was, well, that was the days of
Tipper Gore and
PMRC. Yeah, that was when, music was a big don't do this thing. Now it's just the internet. But back then it was music was the big taboo, you know. But I got to tell you, Murphy's Law opened up and they were tremendous.
Murphy's Law opened up?
Murphy's Law and Fishbone.
Oh, my God. Okay, now if I knew Fishbone, for some reason I didn't think Murphy's.
Fishbone were horrible.
Really?
Yeah, because it was their first tour, I would imagine. They weren't used to it or whatever. Because now they're one of the great live bands I've ever seen. And second best show I've ever been to is Fishbone. But the but at the time, yeah, they were not good. And so, but I was also not there to see them. I was there to see the Beast Boys. And I was so I was 11. I'm guessing that was the summer between fourth and fifth grade. But it was in a theater, and it was one of those shows where the Beastie Boys got a lot more popular than I think that they knew before the tour.
They probably booked it, right? Yeah. Right? It's like, probably Fight for Right to Party had just come out. They booked it. And then by the time you saw it, Brass Monkey and Girls were probably huge hits at that
but
point.
But you could call my mom right now, and she'd tell you, because she was there with my friend and I, and the balcony of the place was literally going up and down. It was, like, it was not prepared for what was about to happen, but the dude from Murphy's Law came out. He goes, "Have a brew," and he threw a beer into the audience. And we were like, "Whoa!" Because that was the first punk band I ever saw. Was Murphy's Law at that show? And I was a wide-eyed youth. But yep, I had right there. I had Rob Halford. Crocus opened up for Def Leppard on the Pyromania tour.
Every time I think of Crocus, I think of Beavis and Butthead. Look at Lead Singer going, "That guy's whole head sucks."
Yeah.
It was just like a big like afro type thing that he had. Like it was like the 80s. It's like he couldn't, it's like he permed his hair to look like a lion's mane. You remember that?
Yeah. I mean, it was awesome. No, they said Screaming in the Night was their song. And I had taken one of my mom's Isotoner gloves and cut the fingers off of it, and then cut the knuckles out of it.
Oh, hell yeah, you did.
And a guy, like, at the show, because I went to the Judas Priest show, and I bought, like, the tour book and, you know, a shirt, and the guy was, like, making fun of me for my, and I was 11. And I'm like, all right, dude.
Cool dude.
Yeah, he was super priest merch guy. So he's like, "Oh, would you take one of your mom's gloves?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And he's like, And then, well, now, so looking back, I know he was making fun of me, but I thought he was telling me I was cool.
Well, we're going to have on at 7:20 Ty Anderson, not obviously just because of some of the Bruin stuff that's been going on, but, you know, his uncle is Gary Cherone. It's uncle, right? Like that.
He sent Eddie Van Halen back about 10 years.
Well, he spent a decent amount of time with Eddie Van Halen as a kid.
A picture to prove it.
Well, I mean, he did. I mean, it's like, you know, he's, as I said, his uncle was the singer of Van Halen.
Now,
for
did
a
he
little
spend
bit.
Time with him, or just at that show?
No. I think that there's a little bit of time that he did spend with him. I think that he was really, I'm putting words in his mouth, but from I think what he's told us before, you know, he's fairly close to his uncle Gary Cherone, and I think during that time, you know, there were several instances that he did get to be around Eddie Van Halen. And I guess Eddie Van Halen really liked Ty from what, you know, what we've been told. But that's kind of a cool connection to have. I wouldn't mind just talking to him about those early days as well.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see how much he hung out with him. I mean, Ty better not be lying right now, because the next thing you know, you got the news calling you.
Yeah, you're not telling tall tales with your mourning.
No. But if he's telling tall tales, if he's exaggerated his relationship with Mr. Van Halen, he is about to be found out.
News crew camped out on your doorstep.
Exactly.
Yep.
They've come for less.
They knock on the door. They talk to your girlfriend. Stick a microphone in her face.
Yep.
There's no telling what happens after that.
Lord knows what my wife would say now if someone came to the house. She'd say, "What do you want? Come in. Give them a cup of coffee." All right.
I have stories for you?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, what do you want to know? Sure. Let's go. All right, Rich, what do we have going on?
Well, is Cam Newton coming back for this weekend? Bill Belichick talks about that, and we'll get to all the latest.
All right, we will have that for you in just...
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
This is not your conventional sports radio show.
It's become painfully clear.
Toucher and Rich, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Recapping what you missed, it's Toucher and Rich.
98.5, The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. We can get into this a little bit later. Well, first of all, I have a guy was my first boss in Cumming, Georgia, at my radio station. And it just shows you what property value is in the South. He has a room in his house, a literal room, painted like an Eddie Van Halen guitar. And it's just a shrine to Eddie Van Halen. And it wasn't done yesterday. Like, it's all Van Halen books, an Eddie guitar, like framed magazine covers and album covers and all this stuff. It's insane. He has an Eddie Van Halen room in his house, so he's not doing well today. But he links an article to they rank all 131 Van Halen songs from best to worst, or worst to best.
Yeah.
And he doesn't just put the songs down. It's not him that wrote it. It's this guy from Vulture, so it might have been him. But there is a solid paragraph that comes with every song. This is a man who sat down and wrote this out.
You know what? So on my Facebook feed, every once in a while, there's like maybe it's Metal Hammer. Like,
oh, yeah!
Every once in a while.
Samantha Fox posters of her nude.
And I'm like, all right, so they know me, obviously. But the other day, they ranked every Metallica song and did the exact same thing. And you know what? I probably spent 15 minutes reading, like just picking and choosing. And like, you know, debating with myself, oh, how could you put that low? Or, oh, how could you rank that high? And for some reason, if you're like a nerd like me and you're into that stuff, taking a paragraph per song is A-OK. Like, that is
how
time
fun,
well spent.
How fun would it be to write that?
Oh, like, if you said, all right, Rich, I want you to rank all of the, you know, Helmet songs, Deftones songs, U2 songs, like bands that I'm really into, like, I would love that. Like, if someone gave me that assignment, I would absolutely love that.
Yeah, you just sit, it would be like a day, and you would just sit down and be totally immersed in it.
Well, yesterday we talked about the top Stallone movies that guy had written. It was a paragraph for, it's 47. It was like 47 different ones. Yeah, what was number one, by the way, on this list, on the Van Halen
I don't know,
songs?
But I can tell you what the last song was. That I can tell you number 131. Why Can't This Be Love?
What? Why Can't Be Love is a good pop song.
It says, just to be clear, this is not the worst Van Halen song to listen to. I won't jump out of a moving vehicle when it comes on the radio, but Why Can't This Be Love was the first single release on 5150, and that was the worst decision the band ever made.
He's crazy. There's some people who are such David Lee Roth purists. There's a lot of David Lee Roth garbage. And 5150...
This is why you write the article.
There you go. 5150 is Van Halen's second best album.
5150 was never purchased by an 11-year-old Freddie T.
That's a great
never
album,
never purchased.
Great. Matter of fact...
And I worshipped Van Halen.
I would think that the song 5150 is one of the most underrated Van Halen riffs ever.
Is if they opened up with Get Up or Summer Nights, the collective view of the post-Roth VH would likely be quite different. Introducing the Hagar era with a footnote. With a cold mid-tempo keyboard-based love song installed the belief that Van Halen was moving away from the high-octane fiesta rock and toward a responsible AOR maturity. That sentiment was galvanized almost 4 months later when Roth's solo band debuted with Yankee Rose, an unbelievably ebullient song about wanting to F the Statue of Liberty. Roth never came up with another single as good as Yankee Rose, but the impact was seismic and perpetual. From that point forward, we would always know who was Laverne and who was Shirley.
I love how he like pines for this. Oh, I love it when it was just pure music. Dude, their biggest hit was Jump on the album before that, which was like a roller skating rink
Van
song.
Van Halen. Now that Van Halen is dead, people are going back and realizing how terrible Van Hagar was.
No, Van Hagar is
you are
much
on
better
an
than
island.
People give them credit.
You are on an island.
I might be, but I mean, Van Hagar wrote hits, and they wrote good pop
I will
songs,
tell you
and
this.
I would say that the riffage never stopped being great. And you look at some of that David
Did
Lee
they
Roth
have,
stuff, it was embarrassing.
Oh.
Embarrassing.
Eat 'em and Smile, it would be the third best Van Halen record.
Well, I loved Eat 'Em and Smile. I'm not knocking that.
Eat 'Em and Smile.
About, like, and Big Bad William is now Sweet Willie now or whatever like
well,
that.
Well, that featured the father, Wolfgang. That had Wolfgang on it, the father playing the clarinet.
And all the
Were you going to deny now that Eddie Van Halen is dead, mm-hmm. you're going to deny a song that featured his father on the net?
By the way, it was David Lee Roth that ruined those songs, not Eddie Van Halen. Like, all the stupid covers that they did,
They did Big Bad Bill's Sweet William now because of Eddie Van Halen and Alex's father.
Mm.
He plays on the song. Oh, look at you.
Not a good song at
all. It doesn't matter. What, you wouldn't do it? You stink. Big Bad Bill don't fight anymore.
Wallach was down with the clarinet. We know that.
Hell yes, I was.
Did you ever try to play Big Bad Bill as Sweet William?
No, I did not.
If you had a clarinet sitting down, why wouldn't you just try it?
No, you would think. I didn't.
If it makes you feel better, 130 is tattoo. This was the quote-unquote hit off the 2012 Return to Roth project.
A Different Kind of Truth, right? That's the name of the album?
Remember when we got that? Were you around when we got that?
Oh, the Ruck was handing it out.
Check it out. I got a bunch of copies.
Yep, he did.
Who still has a CD player in the car?
That's right.
Rip it up, dude.
Yep.
Eddie Trunk loves CDs. If you get that reference, you can hang out with us. Eddie Trunk, what is the best Saxon record? Denim and Leather? That is a poser take.
Hang on, this is Hair Metal Jim Rome?
No, Rucker and Rome are very close to each other.
Okay.
I was, by the way, for some reason on my YouTube feed, the Chrissy, or Chris, he doesn't even call him Chrissy, Chris Everett thing came up.
Oh, which Jim is Everett. Great. Which, if you revisit that every 5 years or so, it's fantastic.
If I was Jim Everett, I would have knocked him out of this, because he's not even being funny.
He tried to.
He didn't finish the job.
He flipped the table over and went after him.
No. I just watched it. I mean, he flips the table over, gets him down, and he could have just beat the living hell out of him, but he didn't. Dan, go ahead.
Hey, guys. Fred, you're out of your mind. You're absolutely out of your mind.
Just out of rehab. Change your tone. No, just go ahead.
Okay. Gotcha. But, you know, Van Hagar versus Van Halen is like Fleetwood Mac pre-Lindsey Buckingham.
Oh, that's insane.
It's like pre-Neil Peart for Rush. I mean, are you kidding me?
Their best-selling... Okay, you can't say that because Fleetwood Mac was a marginal... I mean, they were a popular band, but they were marginal. 1984 is the best...
Exploded.
Hang on. Will you pump the brakes and let me say one thing, and then I will let you go. I won't let you go. I'll let you talk. 1984 is their best-selling record in any incarnation.
Okay. Take the follow-up albums of 5150, OU812, and Lawful Carnal Knowledge. They got more hits on those three albums.
Van Halen won their second highest
1984 album.
No, but Van Halen won his second best-selling record.
So I didn't say that 84 wasn't their best album. I'm saying that Van Hagar as a collective was way better than Van Halen with Roth.
Evidence you're putting out is false. And also, what do I care about a hit song? So the masses can rock the Halen? All of a sudden it went from the Trans Am to the Grand Am? Come on.
I'll give you this.
See, I like both. I think they're both fantastic. I really
can't
do. There's stuff I like for both.
No, you gotta take a stand.
I like what I like. But if you had to just pick the best song, it would be a David Lee Roth era song. I think you have to go probably either Hot for Teacher is their best song or Panama. I would argue that the best single song is probably a Roth song, but man, there are some really underrated songs that weren't even hits that were in the Van Hagar era. There was a song called Amsterdam off the Humans Being on the Twister soundtrack of all things. Killed. I think that's the last song that they
played. Sammy Hagar's got a bad voice.
No, he doesn't. Sammy Hagar's got a good voice.
He's got a bad voice.
You like the Three Lock Box. Don't tell me that. You like a bad voice.
Yes, Three Lock Box is the greatest.
You prefer solo Hagar, all right?
Montrose. That's what you like.
Well, I was a huge Montrose fan.
Montrose.
When Montrose was around, I was like, this Montrose guy can play the gee, but he needs some guy to front him. It's like the Ted Nugent band when it was just like, hey, put the guy with the afro in front. But But no, yeah, and then when Hagar went solo, I was skeptical, but I was like, all right, 3 lakh bucks, you got it. Sammy Hagar must have won like a dare to get those solo records put out.
Give to Live, isn't that one of the songs?
Yes, Give to Live.
And he'd play it live with the Halen. That was the one song they gave him. Oh, they do I Can't Drive 55 every once in a while, too. They would throw that out there.
The best is in the Hagar book that he talks about how, you know, I was the best-selling artist out there. There was really no competition. And then you go Wikipedia it, and you're like, you didn't sell any records. Yeah. And then he's like, it was between me and Ronnie James Dio. And then you go, what could have been? Imagine if Ronnie James Dio was the singer of Van Halen.
That would have been awesome. Come on, that would have killed.
It would have been the greatest thing ever.
It would have been
all satanic. Did you see the picture? Because obviously everyone's on social media putting pictures up of, you know, of Van Halen back in the day. Did you see the picture of, it's Tommy Lee, Eddie Van Halen, Ronnie James Dio, and someone else? And Ronnie James Dio is wasted, and he has this beer, and he's like this little elf, like just with this
right.
big
he
smile.
He probably had
his
a thimble full of beer and was just loaded.
Right, the
poor little guy.
It's the opposite of Andre the Giant. The beer looks like it's king sized.
It's like a looks like a Foster's, just like an oil can.
But he's got this big drunken smile on his face. You're like, look at little Ronnie James Dio having fun. He's not even like into Satan at that moment.
No.
All right. Well, there you go. We can do quite a bit on this top 132 Van Halen songs, and we'll do a little something today. But we'll come back with a little sports action. Here are the headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Now, more Touch Rich. On 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Sports Hub, we're Toucher and Rich. Rich, what's going on?
Well, the Patriots yesterday had a hold-your-breath moment when they announced that on the heels of Cam Newton's positive COVID test, another player on the team may have also tested positive. Practice squad member Bill Murray became the second member of the organization placed on the COVID-19 reserve
list. Maybe finally
list.
He'll get his stripes.
I knew that we were going to get one of those soon. I just kind of went right by it.
Maybe he should be afraid of that germ.
Don't know that one. What's that reference?
Ain't afraid of no ghosts.
Oh.
Okay. If you're gonna stick with me, I mean, and if you're gonna be on this show, you gotta be quick.
The germ, okay. It's ghost. Yeah. I ain't afraid of no germ.
Maybe that got lost in translation.
Hey, that's better. That's better.
Yeah.
You're working your way back.
Well, I don't wanna make this like Groundhog's Day and have you keep forgetting what I'm saying.
Yeah. What about Bob?
Yeah, what about him?
Well, the first reaction, understandably for many, was, here we go again, but two glimmers of hope here are, first of all, the COVID-19 reserve list doesn't necessarily mean you have tested positive for COVID. It could also be for someone who just has to quarantine after being in close contact with an infected person. On top of that, Tommy Curran reported that Murray was not on either flight to Kansas City. Occasionally, practice squad players do travel with the team, but here was not the case. So hopefully, this means the Patriots dodged a bullet. But in the meantime, judging by what we know of the timeline of the discovery of Cam Newton's positive test, today would be the first day that Cam could test once again, as long as he has remained asymptomatic. But according to Bill Belichick, they really have no specific expectations for Cam return, and the whole quarterback situation is still up in the air.
We'll see how it goes. We'll make a decision on that after we get more information on there, all those guys, starting with Cam.
All right. You've got mail, Bill Belichick. But if my math is correct, if Cam does indeed test today, it has to be negative, and then he has to wait 24 hours and then test again. And if that test is negative, then he can return to play, which makes it seem that if everything goes as well as it can, the earliest that Cam could practice would either be Friday afternoon or Saturday. To be quite honest, I don't know how long it takes for you to get your test back, because it sure sounds like it's half a day, the way that we've been, you know, like the, when they took the test before they went to Kansas City, they got them later on that night. I'm not quite sure, but it sounds like Friday or Saturday.
Saturday's not a practice, so if he can't practice on Friday, he's got no shot.
You don't think they'd put him in there without practicing?
Honestly, I don't think so, no.
You see, I disagree. I think they would, but I also think that there is a benefit to keeping him out, because you've got a bye week after that and mm-hmm. just give him plenty of time. That's the thing, is that he may be asymptomatic, but we also just don't know, you know, whether or not this is something that might wipe him out a little bit. I mean, it affects different people different ways. So I have no idea how he's feeling, but I just think that maybe you just keep him out for this game, because I agree with Fred. I think that with as bad as these two backup quarterbacks are, and they are bad, that they can still beat the Denver Broncos at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Broncos sure. have a bad coach. What are you talking about, kid? I'm the greatest. He's Nick Fangio, and then you have Mark Rippon's nephew as the quarterback, and everyone's hurt. And they wanted the Jets to win the game that they played. They let Sam Darnold. They didn't want to tackle him on a 65-yard scramble. I'm pretty content if I'm the Patriots that we're going to win this game.
No Von Miller. I mean, that certainly helps.
You know what? You know what I thought about yesterday is, if Cam Newton didn't fall into their lap, was this their plan? Like, looking at those two play, like, that was their plan going into the season with those two guys?
They would have gotten a veteran quarterback. They would have done something. They would have gotten Rivers, or they would have gotten Watson or something.
They were all gone before they signed Cam.
But they knew Cam was there.
Yeah, but you didn't know. They didn't know someone wasn't going to snap him up. I disagree. I think this. It is a little shocking that, you know, before Cam Newton's price finally came down to the point where both sides agreed to play ball, they thought, you know what, Stidham's our starter. Hoyer's our backup. We might start Hoyer for the first month, but Stidham will be our guy of the future. And watching the two of them play Monday night, it was an eye-opening experience.
Like this was something that you were going to be satisfied going into the season with?
I'm telling you, they would have signed a veteran.
They might have off the scrap heap.
What was the Dalton? Wasn't Dalton gone at that point?
No, Dalton went to Dallas before
that. Yeah, but before Cam got signed,
before Dalton was gone. Dalton was a backup to Dak in Dallas before Newton signed.
Holy moly. Well, speaking of COVID, if you notice, Bill wasn't taking any chances with the double mask assassin look. He had the N95 layered by a black neck gaiter looking like a stork ninja. But yesterday, he was asked about why he wore two masks on Monday night.
Basically, that's what we've been instructed to do.
All right. Thank you, Bill Belichick. Appreciate it.
Everybody's doing it, of course.
I know why.
Everybody looks like you.
No, because he had a great mask, because it had nothing leaning against his nose. He had complete nose freedom. That's what you want out of a mask, is you want to, I mean, he...
Why the second mask?
Because he had the first, what it looked like to me, if you want me to break it down, is it looked like he had almost a cast on, like it was something that propped up so the mask wouldn't tighten around his mouth. So he basically had the freedom of, like, he could have stuck his tongue out 6 inches and not hit mask.
Yeah, it's like one of those N95s.
Yeah, baby.
That has a lot of room.
Like,
but why the second? But why the
blow
second
up
mask?
Maybe he was going down to the quarry, one of them M80s. Blow up some stuff.
Sure.
I don't know. It's the first mask. Maybe the first mask wasn't a mask at all. Maybe it was just something to prop up everything. All I know is I wished I had what he had, because it looked very comfortable and you could talk and breathe in it.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike, that's why I'm anti-mask.
Well, the COVID taketh away for fans this week, just as it was announced that the Steelers this week would have a limited amount of fans in the stands, 7,500 or so for the first time this season. It was also announced that because the increase of COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations in the Green Bay area, that the Packers have put an indefinite hold on hosting fans for games this season at Lambeau Field. Now, there's no word yet on any kind of immediate plans for fans at Gillette Stadium, and I'm sure we would hear it first if that was something that they wanted to end up doing, but nothing.
I was I don't know if they sent it to us or sent it to whatever, said that the season ticket holders said not that they were told not this week, but to be on hold, to be aware, to be kind of know what's going on.
Numbers are still holding here. I mean, it's gotten worse in other places. The numbers are still right about where they were, what, 2-3 weeks ago? I mean, they kind of flattened out a little bit.
Not in Boston.
No.
In the city of Boston, that's like, that, that's state, not a good
well,
scene.
Well, I understand you're COVID central on your little island there, but honestly.
No, in Boston. In
no,
the city
I understand.
Of Boston. Yeah,
in certain like, in certain spots in this state, there are red areas popping up. We were joking last week that a lot of red communities border the great state of New Hampshire, which is open for anybody and anything to do whatever they want. It's not a mistake that there are a lot of high volume COVID cases bordering the state of New Hampshire. But for a lot of the communities in Massachusetts, in the state, the numbers are pretty steady. Can we agree on that?
It went up from 0.8 to 1.1. It's one of those things where it's like I don't know, and I think that's probably why they're hesitating, because I thought by now they would have let fans in, because it looked at the beginning of the season like they were headed that way, and I think the hesitation is just because of that.
You're inviting unless you only invite people from Massachusetts. That's the danger.
Do you know guess what my take on having fans is?
What's your take?
Pro. I mean, listen, you got an 68,000 there, you say?
68,000.
Yeah, they did say they were only going to allow in 13,000.
Yeah,
probably get spaced out just
probably. Time. I mean, you could sit all alone. You could have your own section.
The danger.
Listen, It's outdoors.
I know,
if you got masks on and you're spaced out, I don't think there should be a reason why you couldn't.
If you're
do that
spaced out, you take off the mask when you're
You can't
down.
Take off the mask.
You can take off the mask if there's no one around you.
That's the rules in the NFL. If you're there, you're supposed to keep your mask on. That's all the other places are doing that.
You come take my mask. I'll fight you.
Out of my cold, dead face.
That's right.
Screw you. 301 is mine.
Right, right.
Don't come
right.
near me.
That's
well,
right.
Once again, Tom Brady virtually sat down with the barnacle known as Mr. Jim Gray, and he was asked about his offensive coordinator, Bill O'Brien, being fired 4 weeks into the season. Do you want to play this when we get back? Because we've got
sure, yes, I would. I think that's a good move.
All right.
So we'll hear all about Tom Brady. And I would say this, is that if Foxborough's behaving themselves and they have low numbers, let people come. What are you going to 13,000 people in a city? It's like, it's one of those, like the Blues Brothers riding around in the mall. If there's enough room and no one's around, just sit there. Ever been to like one of your kids' events when it's at like a stadium or something? Just the vastness of the stadium compared to the low amount of people? Let people enjoy themselves. There, 13,000 of them. Only the elite. Let them in. All right, we'll be right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task. But after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Coming up next at 10, Sports Talk while you're on the clock. Zolak and Bertrand. Right now, it's Toucher and Rich on Boston's Home for Sport. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
.985 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Rich, what's going on with Tom Brady?
Oh, well, he sat down with his buddy Jim Gray, who knows Oprah, who knows Oprah's wife. So they all had a dinner. And he was asked about his old offensive coordinator, Bill O'Brien, being fired 4 weeks into the season. And here's what Jim Gray had to say.
Tom, unfortunately, today, your former offensive coordinator, a guy who was also your quarterback coach while you were with the Patriots, Bill O'Brien of the Houston Texans, was relieved of his job. Team's 0-4. Seems a bit early in the season, but the results just haven't been where they want them.
You know, that was really tough to see. I've known Billy for a long time, and I think he's a hell of a coach. It's a very difficult part of the profession, and I thought he's done a great job at Houston over the years. Those guys really seem to love playing for him. 4 weeks ago, everyone was so hopeful about what the season could become. To lose a coach 4 games into the season doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
I think that
and
he's
here's
wrong
a follow-up. Just kidding. No,
no follow-ups at all. No,
that's the way the script goes. Yep, ask the question, move on.
No journalism integrity of any sort.
Real journalist. No mamby-pamby BS.
Well, if there were Vegas odds, it looks like Tom's other offensive coordinator buddy may be favored to take O'Brien's spot. So Ian Rappaport is reporting that Josh McDaniels is a, quote, name to watch in the search. And as we mentioned, the now Texans executive vice president of football operations, Jack Easterby, obviously known to be very close to McDaniels. They spent together some time here when they were the Patriots. If you're the Texans and you don't hire Eric Bieniemy, you're crazy. I mean, listen, maybe, just maybe, Josh McDaniels will be able to do something amazing with Cam Newton. Already he's been impressive in the first 3 weeks while he was here. You can't take that away from him. But dude, you have a guy in Eric Bieniemy who just, how is that guy not hired? He's like head of one of the best offenses that we've seen in years.
I'll tell you why, because he's an Andy Reid disciple, and I want Bieniemy to coach the Jets because he's at least fiery. It's about time they got someone. No one listens to anyone over there.
Players love him, apparently, too. That's
right.
The other
but
thing.
But I would imagine, I don't know, but if you're going by my perceptions of things, I would imagine it's because he's an offensive coordinator and the guy who's the head coach is an offensive genius. Just like if you hire Patricia, the Lions defense sucks, and you go, how is that possible? Patricia was the defensive coordinator for a Patriots team. I know they got blasted in the Super Bowl, but you know, this great Patriots defense where they did so much with so little. And then you realize, well, Bill Belichick's a defensive genius. So, you know, Andy Reid is to offense what Belichick is to defense. I think
Saying that you don't think that Eric Bieniemy is the reason that they're.
Is it Bieniemy or Bieniemy?
It's Bieniemy.
It's Bieniemy. Stop saying Bieniemy. You're driving
me
nuts.
I've called him that ever since he broke my heart as a Georgia Tech fan back in 1990. They got their fifth down. Dumbass.
He wasn't the guy on the fifth down. That was Charles Johnson, who went to Detroit Country Day.
But he was there at the time, and he was a star, and he was a stud, and the guy was excellent.
Are you upset at Ted Johnson? He was on that team too, right?
He was on the Colorado team in 90?
I believe. Wasn't he?
I don't think he was, but yeah, stupid fifth down team. Hey, Georgia Tech, UPI number one, not AP. I know, right? UPI is the one that matters.
They used to pull that stuff all the time. I wonder how much What's-His-Face was paying players back then, too, to go to Georgia Tech. All of a sudden, Georgia Tech was very good and not good again. Now they're running the option.
Sure.
All right, so, but Bieniemy, I want Bieniemy to coach the Jets because he's, again, they've had a bunch of duds, these like, you know, mellow coaches. I want someone to come in and Tomlin them up. I want someone to come in and create a culture, baby. But the thing is how much is he responsible for that offense and how much of it is Andy Reid?
That's fair. But one thing you do know is even if he's not a guy who's in charge or is the brilliant mind behind what you've been seeing out of Patrick Mahomes, players love the dude and they respond to him. And he is the anti-Adam Gase.
I just said I want him for the Jets. And I'm not positive I wouldn't want the Jets job because I don't. If Houston gives him the opportunity to be the general manager of that team, they have not learned a lesson.
No. Well, because McDaniels wants it all, right? Isn't that kind of the thing with him? Is he wants to be able to bring all of his guys, and I just don't know if they're going to do that.
It did not work out well for him the first time.
No, it did not. Man. He was a total fool, a complete idiot.
I mean, McDaniels can truly prove himself this season and could earn himself an excellent job. And if he does something great with Cam, then everything I've said in the past, you know what, you can take it away because he truly had proven himself.
The only way I'd take him is if he brought Caserio with him way that I would take him.
Yeah.
That was what San Francisco was apparently thinking of before they went in there.
Because I would be like, you know, all right, let's get a brain in here. But I wouldn't hire Josh McDaniel anyway. I think he's a total puss.
And you have to remember, you know, Houston deliberately did not install a GM. The thought was that Caserio was going to go to Houston. You remember the Patriots.
Do you think that Josh McDaniel could have, if things were going wrong, could hold the locker room? And
no,
I do not.
No, I do not.
No, they see that's. Listen, we saw him lose his mind on the sidelines over there with the Broncos. Remember, it was Thanksgiving Day where he was. Remember, they started the season. It was like 6-0,
5-0, and they had beaten the Patriots. And he just threw. I don't know what you would call it. A fit. He had a seizure on the field. He's pumping his fists and screaming at the crowd after he beat Belichick.
Belichick all cute.
Yes,
and then they kept losing, and it was Thanksgiving Day where there was that video of him screaming so high-pitched that dogs were, like, peeing blood that he just started, like, losing his mind on the sidelines. I was just like, all right, well, this isn't going to last.
He's like a little high-pitched
guy that just, you know, has had Tom Brady.
In fairness, he has said that he, like, learned from all of that. He can't believe he did some of the stuff that he did.
Out of all the coaches and all the places, I wouldn't want Josh McDaniels. I wouldn't want him. I think that he's shown an incredible lack of character.
If he does something amazing with Cam Newton, it's going to be tough for teams not to.
Well, if I have Cam Newton, who's in his early 30s and is healthy, go screw him.
But is completely different than Tom Brady. So he designed a whole new offense for a guy like Cam. And you didn't even know he was going to be good.
I didn't know he was going to be good, but he is good. He's healthy. I didn't know he was going to be healthy, but he's healthy. My not knowing he was going to be healthy has nothing to do with the fact that he is. All right, no commercials here, just the headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.